Thank you, Jonga Kandemiri, and good evening, Zimbabwe. You're listening to Studio 7 from The Voice of America on Thursday, April 21st, 2016. I'd like to thank you for joining us this evening live from Washington. I'm Dimyake Mwakalyelye. Here are our top stories this evening. An environmentalist says the signing of an international climate change agreement on Friday is set to benefit developed nations.
We really look forward to this, but we are not saying signing is an end to itself. We would actually call for action if we to implement some of the clauses of the agreement.
Zimbabwean lawyers groups challenged the suspension of Harare mayor. And a United States congressional staff member claims that Zimbabwe's land reform program is rippled with corruption.
You may criticize the British for not coming across with the money for land reform, but the British would make the point that they stopped because it wasn't going to black farmers, it was going to cronies of the government.
These stories and much more coming up. Stay tuned. An environmentalist says the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change signing ceremony, scheduled for Friday in New York, is a milestone, especially for developing countries like Zimbabwe. Barnabas Mawire, who is Environment Africa Country Director, says the Paris Agreement is very important as it fills in the vacuum that was left by the expiry of the Kyoto Protocol. Zimbabwe is among the 196 United Nations member countries who signed the Paris Agreement in France in December last year. President Robert Mugabe is already in New York for the ceremony. Mawire tells Studio 7's Jonga Kandemiri that Zimbabwe will have to sacrifice and make sure that the treaty is followed because it is among the countries affected by climate change.
We really look forward to this, but we are not saying signing is an end to itself. We would actually call for action if we to implement some of the clauses of the agreement, and we also want to call on board those that are not yet coming on board, because here we are dealing with a common resource where we all perish as humanity.
Considering the country's economic standing, do you see it being able to implement these treaties?
Yes, I think it is possible for us as a country, irregardless of our situation where we are going through an economic meltdown, because you will find out that prior to this agreement, each country was actually asked to look at its development costs and also come up with what are termed as INDCs, internally determined emissions, yeah? So you will find out that from there, each country actually spells out where they would limit their emissions. And in our case, you'll find out that our emissions are not very high. You see, although this will actually need investment in terms of changing the technologies that we are using.
What has Zimbabwe done in terms of implementing these treaties?
I think borrowing a leaf on other international treaties, our performance, I think it has been good. For instance, I can look at what has been happening on the wildlife front. You look at the CITES treaty. Of course, we agree with certain ideologies, but again, it's putting forward the situation, examining it, and then having the political will to implement it.
That was Barnabas Mawire, Environment Africa Country Director, on the phone from Harare with Studio 7's Jonga Kandemiri. Opposition parties have strongly criticized President Mugabe's attendance at the climate change signing ceremony, saying he's supposed to be attending a crippling drought back home. The Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights has filed an urgent court application seeking an order to set aside the suspension of Harare Mayor Bernard Manyenyeni by local government minister Xavier Kasukuere. Lawyers David Hofisi and Zimbabwe Chimbwa are also seeking an order to allow Manyenyeni to continue carrying out council business and receive allowances in line with his post of mayor. The human rights lawyer further wanted the High Court to order Kasukwere to refrain from suspending, dismissing or engaging in any other activity with a view of removing councillors from the office of mayor of Harare. Councillor Manyanyeni was suspended Wednesday after he appointed a town clerk, a move that was challenged by Kasukwere as unconstitutional. Chimbwa speaks with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu about the High Court application.
We have since received instructions to file an urgent application, which we've just done. So we are challenging the suspension, which we think is invalid and inconsistent with the Constitution of Zimbabwe.
But does the mayor have a legal leg to stand on here? Because we understand, according to the letter from the minister, he suspended him in terms of Section 1141D of the Urban Councils Act.
We think the question should be, does the minister have a leg to stand on? And this is the argument that we have put before in the High Court in Bulawayo. And it was confirmed that the minister does not have powers to suspend a mayor in terms of Section 278 of the new constitution. The section that you are referring to, Section 114 of the Urban Councils Act, is subject to the constitution, which is the supreme law of the land. So the minister is trying to upgrade the Urban Councils Act to the level of the Constitution and usurp the powers that he does not have.
That was Zimbabwe Chimbwa, a member of the Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights, speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Harare. Meanwhile, the National Vendors Union of Zimbabwe, or NAVUZ, says it held a meeting today with Harare Acting Mayor Christopher Mbanga to discuss a petition that was handed over to suspended Mayor Manyanyeni Wednesday before he was sent home by Minister Kasukwere. NAVUZ coordinator Value Dick tells Studio 7's Marvelous Mtlanga Nyahuye that her association is dismayed at the way vendors, especially women, are treated when their goods are confiscated by municipal police. She claims that they are at times allegedly sexually abused by the council police.
We had a meeting at the townhouse and we managed to meet the acting mayor, Councillor Mbanga, who managed to cushion some of the issues that are affecting the council as a board. For example, lack of resources. But at the same time, we asked them where they are getting the resources, like for putting fuel in the vehicles that are always chasing around vendors in the streets, because the vendors are facing serious harassment day in, day out, especially the women. They target the women. I don't know if it is a way of trying to destroy the lives of people, because we all know that vending is where everyone is looking at nowadays since there are no jobs.
So what are some of the forms of harassment that women, especially women vendors, have been facing?
There is beating, there is sexual harassment, they are being handcuffed, they are being thrown like sex into the council vehicles.
And what is the way forward? What did the acting mayor say, looking at all the problems that are in the council right now?
Actually, we suggested, in fact, we demanded a platform whereby we meet the so-called informal committee so that we can map the way forward, and they should put to halt all these harassments and the confiscation of vendors' goods.
That was Value Dick, a coordinator with the National Vendors Union of Zimbabwe, speaking with Studio 7's Marvelous Mtlanga Nyahuye from Harare. Breaking news that just came in. American pop icon Prince has died at the age of 57. News reports say he was found dead early Thursday at his home in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Born Prince Rogers Nelson, the multi-talented and influential musician is known for such songs as 1999, Little Red Corvette, and Purple Rain, the title track of his breakthrough 1984 album and movie. He sold more than 100 million albums worldwide, won 7 Grammys, and picked up an Oscar for Best Original Song Score for Purple Rain. Prince was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 2004. Oh. In this second edition of a two-part report focusing on Zimbabwe's independence, local people talked about missed national targets and the way forward. Our correspondent Taurai Shava brings us more.
From independence to date, the Zimbabwean government has come up with numerous economic blueprints, with general consensus being that although the plans are brilliant on paper, lack of proper follow-through on one hand and adoption of discordant policies on the other have resulted in the failure of the plans. Butler Tambo of the Public Policy Research Institute of Zimbabwe agrees that policy inconsistencies and a knee-jerk sort of reaction to issues of national importance have contributed to the current problems. But Tambo traces Zimbabwe's current problems back to the Rhodesian government's unilateral declaration of independence in 1965 and the subsequent international economic sanctions against the regime. Tambo says although the import substitution policy helped keep Rhodesia's economy ticking, it did not grow much. When the nationalist government took over in 1980, its pro-poor policies meant supporting millions with an economic base which had hitherto been skewed in favor of a minority. Tambo says the current industrial decline is a result of the fact that the majority government did not invest in industrial growth after independence.
Obsolete equipment that we are finding in most industries is courtesy of the fact that equipment was last bought in the 1950s and 1960s. Soon after independence, we relaxed on buying new equipment for industry. Issues to do with electricity, for instance, the only electricity generation plant that was put up after independence was in 1987, which is Wange Power Station, 1987. But for any developing country, a country which is serious about industrialization, you're supposed to come up with a new power plant at least after every 5 years. So that is what has caused us to be in this current mess where, for instance, we've got power outages and the like.
Like other observers, Tambo also notes that corruption and government's apparent failure to take decisive steps to curb it have also contributed to the country's problems.
Corruption has been a very big challenge in Zimbabwe. For instance, there had been the leadership code that was the ruling party that had come up with, but that leadership code was thrown out of the window when some ministers started driving the latest vehicles. And when they were asked to declare their assets, they no longer were interested. You fast forward to about 1987, the Willowgate scandal. A Sandura commission was set up, some people were cornered, but then again, a lot of people were let off the hook with the presidential pardon. We've had the war victims compensation fund, the VIP, the housing schemes, all those were looted. GMP was looted. Noxim was looted. So corruption has been a big dent on our economy. Right now, I think the president has also admitted that $15 billion cannot be accounted for from diamond revenue. But so far, no one has been investigated. So far, no one has been arrested.
Writing on his blog, lawyer and analyst Alex Magaisa says the Lancaster House Agreement, on which the new nation was built, provided for a weak foundation, mainly because in the early years it allowed for the continuation of racial discrimination and also left the land question unresolved. Magaisa says some of the country's problems in recent years can arguably be traced to the agreement. Reginald Shoko, Matabeleland Region President of the Affirmative Action Group, says for Zimbabwe to get out of its multifaceted or intertwined problems, there is need to desist from policy discord as well as political squabbles and adopt the ideal of self-sacrifice which was shown by liberation fighters in the fight for the country's independence.
To come out of this mess, we need to pull together in one direction. We have to take a certain few pains, just like those who fought wars for us to be free, took pains. We also have to take pains to solve these things. A social contract between labor, government, industry and civic society on the way forward. Because at the moment we are a nation that is not knowing where it's going. Some are preaching Mugabe must go our agenda, some are crying of sanctions. So we need to sit down as a people, as Zimbabweans first, and find ways to go forward. And the biggest thing that we do, because we now compete in a global village, we now need to look at things we have comparative advantage on and move from there.
There may be no agreement on how Zimbabwe got into its current situation, but that the country is facing serious social, economic and political problems is not debatable. Reporting for Studio 7 from Lawayo, this is Taurai Shava.
Coming up, a closer look at Zimbabwe's controversial land reform program. Stay tuned. first, a look at regional and international news. President Barack Obama said the U.S. and Gulf state leaders remain united in efforts to destroy the Islamic State group and stabilize the conflict-ridden Middle East region. U.S. Republican presidential hopeful Donald Trump is turning his attention and rhetoric toward the Democratic frontrunner Hillary Clinton after both posted impressive wins in New York on Tuesday. Trump campaigned yesterday in Maryland, one of the five states holding primaries next Tuesday. VOA's senior national correspondent Jim Malone says the New York primaries established possible nominees for both parties. Ethiopia's military says it has entered South Sudan and surrounded villages where more than 100 children abducted from Ethiopia are being held. South African President Jacob Zuma says there was no undue or improper influence in a government arms deal in the late 1990s. Zuma, who had once been implicated in the allegations around the strategic arms procurement package, usually known simply as the arms deal, made the announcement today on national television. He said an independent commission found not a single iota of evidence that any of the officials involved in the deal accepted any bribes. And finally, Harriet Tubman, an African-American woman credited with leading hundreds of slaves to freedom in the U.S., will replace President Andrew Jackson on the $20 bill. Tubman will become the first African-American featured on U.S. currency and the first woman on paper currency in more than 100 years. This is Studio 7, coming to you live from the Voice of America in Washington. A United States congressional staff member has attributed Britain's decision to renege on its Lancaster House commitment to compensate for land in Zimbabwe on what he calls the country's corrupt and lopsided land redistribution exercise. Studio 7's Gibbs Dube reports.
Almost three decades after Zimbabwe undertook a controversial land reform exercise that saw many white farmers forcibly removed from the farms they occupied, debate has been raging over why President Robert Mugabe's government embarked on what has been described as a haphazard and chaotic exercise. The debate was reignited at a recent town hall hosted by Voice of America's Zimbabwe service titled Zimbabwe at 36, The Way Forward. Staff Director Gregory P. Simpkins of the U.S. House Subcommittee on Africa, Global Health and Human Rights clashed with his Zimbabwean co-panelists, Baptist minister and educator Reverend Isaac Mwase and businesswoman Sibongile Sithole-Sibanda on the genesis of the reform and beneficiaries. Simpkins declared Zimbabwe's land reform exercise as mired in controversy since the country's independence from British rule and beneficial to mostly loyalists of President Robert Mugabe's ruling ZANU-PF party. He further claimed that white commercial farmers were forced over the years to pay for the land by some suspected ZANU-PF supporters as they knew that they got it through unconstitutional means.
The whites in Zimbabwe, the white farmers, admitted that the way they got the land originally was unfair. They knew that. But they had an agreement with ZANU where they would be criticized by the Mugabe government, but they would give him money. And that worked for a long time until at a certain point, President Mugabe felt he had to give the land away to the so-called war veterans, although some of them were much too young to have ever been in the war.
Britain provided millions of dollars under the so-called Willing Buyer, Willing Seller land ownership scheme for the resettlement of thousands of people soon after independence, but reportedly ended the payments with the incoming administration of Tony Blair, who demanded accountability for the money disbursed.
You may criticize the British for not coming across with the money for land reform, but the British would make the point that they stopped because it wasn't going to black farmers, it was going to cronies of the government.
The United States reportedly pledged to pay $75 million every year towards the land reform program in the first 10 years of Zimbabwe's independence, but that was not done. President Mugabe defied Britain's call for accountability, saying Zimbabwe was not obliged to do so. It was soon after that the ruling ZANU-PF party decided to forcibly take over white-owned commercial farms in 2000, claiming that Britain had reneged on paying for Zimbabwe's land reform program. But Simpkins said this land reform program did not benefit millions of Zimbabweans, including farm workers.
They did not give it, I should point out, to the black farm workers. They gave it to people who used the land as collateral.
However, Reverend Mwase disputed this fact, stating that some families have benefited immensely from the land reform program.
If you go into families, you're going to find that some have done well, and many are doing really well. I have a relative, he did acquire land, and if you look at the wealth that that family has now accumulated, it would not have been possible if land which had been taken illegally from the local population had not been addressed. Yes, we can blame a lot of policies that the government has adopted and the failures, but let's not lose sight of the successes that are there in the background.
He noted that the agrarian reforms were designed to address the lopsided land distribution pattern in Zimbabwe.
The land question needed to be addressed. Doing a post-mortem on why things went awry is going to be very difficult, because what was happening in Zimbabwe was against the backdrop of a global economy where things were just getting hard.
His views were echoed by Sidile Sibanda, but she noted that the land is not being fully utilized by some new black farmers.
The land reform thing was a good idea. It was a brilliant idea. But what did we do with the land once we acquired it? Machinery was sitting there and rotting because the people who took over the land were not doing anything with the land, because it was the cronies of the government. It was the government officials who took over the land and did not produce.
Obi Ebuna, a correspondent of the state-controlled Herald newspaper, argued that the land reform program was being impeded by sanctions. He asked Simkins why the U.S. recently imposed restrictive sanctions on some agrochemical industries.
Last month, the Office of Foreign Assets Control, the Treasury Department, decided to sanction Chemplex Corporation and the Zimbabwe Fertilizing Corporation. Could you explain, in your opinion, the impact that's going to have on the agriculture sector?
In his response, Simkins noted that the sanctions at times have an unintended negative impact.
Yes, there are other companies in addition to those that would affect the economy negatively. That's what happens when you have sanctions. The sanctions weren't put on willy-nilly. They were put on because those companies are in league with officials who have violated human rights. That's why they were sanctioned. Does it hurt? Of course it does. And as I said, there are some unintended consequences associated with Zedera that we need to look at and we need to remove.
America and its allies imposed targeted sanctions on President Robert Mugabe and his inner circle over alleged human rights violations and election rigging. But Mr. Mugabe says the sanctions were imposed after Harare embarked on the land reform exercise. The president has blamed the sanctions for the country's current poor state of the economy. Reporting for Studio 7 in Washington, D.C., I am Kip Stube.
Okay, now it's time for the Youth Show. It's time to engage with Studio 7's Chioneso Jani.
Hello, Zimbabwe. Good evening. This is Chioneso Jani, your host for Let Us Engage. Today we have a dynamic young man, and he's going to be talking to us about renewable energy. His name is Donald Chachukuta, so stay engaged. Hello, Donald. How are you?
I'm good, Chioneso. Thank you for having me.
Great. Please tell us why we should get into renewable energy and what is renewable energy?
Renewable energy is the thing of the moment, Chioneso, not only here in Africa, but across the world. It's a big topic that is being discussed at the highest levels, because we have a big problem of carbon dioxide that has accumulated in the atmosphere. So we need to address the issue of how we deal with energy, because if we continue having a culture of getting our energy from fossil fuels, things like coal, things like oil, we keep depleting resources and we keep polluting the atmosphere.
Amazing. Can you please tell us how the youth of Zimbabwe can engage in issues of renewable energy?
Zimbabwe right now is the best place for renewable energy as a business, especially for the youth. Why? Because, one, it's an area that has not been penetrated, and it's an area that's offering a lot of opportunities. You know now that our largest supply of power, Kariba, is running low, and there is great need and demand of power in Zimbabwe. Factories are closing, and we know that there's a lot of load shedding happening. Now, the solution to all this is renewable energy, and the youth have got an opportunity which will also create employment for them. The government actually has put up a facility to empower the youth, and even in the budget that was addressed by Minister Chinamasa, it has got a provision, an allocation for the youth to tap into and get involved in renewable energy. Not only will they be solving the national crisis, but also they will be improving their lives.
Youth out there, you have heard it, get into renewable energy. Last and foremost, can you tell us in the shortest word possible, what projects can we be involved in terms of renewable energy?
There are quite a number of projects in renewable energy because it's a broad area. Youth can get involved in wind energy, they can get involved in solar energy, they can get involved in solar water heating, they can get involved in solar water pumping in farms, and also in schools, applying schools, even in the manufacturing of the panels themselves, including the wind turbine. This is a big business, and factories can be managed by youth, and youth can be engaged.
Thank you very much. Youth, you've heard it. This is a great opportunity to get into renewable energy. Until we meet tomorrow, and when we talk about health, get engaged with Chioniso.
Thank you so much, Chioniso.
Thanks very much, Chioniso Jani. Of course, tune in tomorrow for another piece on Zimbabwe's youth, coming to you every day from Studio 7 here in Washington. So we mentioned earlier some breaking news. Prince, you all know him, the American icon, died very young at the age of 57. News reports say that he was found early Thursday at his home in Minneapolis, Minnesota. We're just going to give you a little bit of a taste of maybe a song you might be familiar with that he sang. Let's go crazy. Go crazy. Punch a higher floor. Living in, take a look around. At least you got friends. I call my old lady for a friendly word. She picked up the phone, dropped it on the floor. That's all I heard. I'm not gonna let the elevator break us down. Oh no, let's go crazy. Let's get nuts. Slip for the purple. So in case you missed it, that was the music of Prince, Let's Go Crazy. He died today at the age of 57. Moving on with our show, before I forget, stay tuned for Studio 7 Live Talk at 8:30 p.m., where our Women's Roundtable hosts, Marvelous Mtlanga Nyahuye and Praxedes Jeremiah, will be talking about the treatment of women vendors. So please call in 001-202-619-2077. Again, 202-619-2077, and share your thoughts. A quick recap before we go today of our top stories. An environmentalist says the signing of an international climate change agreement on Friday is set to benefit developing nations. Zimbabwe lawyers groups challenge the suspension of Harare Mayor Bernard Manyenyeni, and a U.S. congressional staff member claims that Zimbabwe's land reform program is rippled with corruption. I'm Dimyake Mokalielie, leaving you with Ntunga Mili Nkomo for Ndebele.